This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international programme of the non-profit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is Tim Russ, Lieutenant Commander Tuvok on Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hi everyone at home and welcome. This is To The Journey. I'm your co-host, Kay Shaw, and with me as always is...
Zachary Fruling.
Well, today on To The Journey, we're going to continue our very short series of secondary engineering characters. Well, I think it's going to be a series of two, so it's not really a series, but you know.
You mean, are we going to talk about Torek's twin brother, Vorik?
We are, yes. I wanted to give the illusion of continuity there, that was all.
It's an illusion.
It is an illusion, yes. There's not generally any continuity in my thought patterns, really, to be honest.
Just like in Voyager.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fine. We'll have this and we'll pretend there's continuity, but then we'll have a magic reset button at the end of it.
Well, Kay, before we get started talking about Vorik, I heard through the grapevine, or should I say the Chateau Picard grapevine, that Suzanne will be back with us again next week.
Yay! I'm really excited to have her back. Yes, she's almost done with her stint in the nursery division of Starfleet Academy.
She's actually going to be bringing her new offspring, Lieutenant Junior Grade Logan, to join us. And oddly enough, he outranks Harry Kim.
He does already outrank Harry Kim, yes.
That was fast.
Yes. Fast, but not necessarily particularly surprising.
Not surprising at all. Everyone outranks Harry.
Harry's just sitting there going, even the baby's been promoted before me. But yes, we'll have Suzanne back next week with us, so that's really exciting. I've missed her. I've really missed her.
Well, I don't like not being in a routine, and I have really enjoyed our TTJ Friday night recordings. It's our TTJ family time together.
So. Yeah, and you know, when Suzanne's not here, you and I just end up talking about trains for 45 minutes or whatever it was.
We literally talked for the last 45 minutes before we started recording about trains and bridges and many other To The Journey tangents before we started talking about Voyager.
And of course, as you've all come to expect, the differences in British and American terminology thereof.
Well, we keep discovering these things. It's like, this can't be news to someone knows about all of these things and they're like, God, you guys, this is obvious. But we still find it interesting when we encounter our linguistic difference. How do we communicate at all?
I don't know. It's a miracle, quite frankly.
Must be the universal translator.
Yes, it must be. And who is it, Zach, that keeps that universal translator running on a day-to-day basis?
Well, it's either Vorik or it's Joe Carey, one or the other.
And we already talked about Joe Carey, so...
So he's out. Yeah. It's got to be Vorik.
It's got to be Vorik, yeah. So where do we start on Vorik?
So I kind of want to start with the obvious question that there's no actual answer to of whether Vorik and Torek from The Next Generation are actually related. Are they brothers? Are they identical twins? Are they distant cousins?
Well, I think this has been established as like semi-canon, I think. If there even,
is.
Yes, I think.
What does that even mean,
semi-canon? Well, this is what I was about to say, if there is such a thing as semi-canon, which is everything that Jerry Taylor thought in her head but didn't write down. So
Okay, that's if anything counts as semi-canon, that does.
Or even stuff she did write down, but not in scripts, just in books instead. But yeah, she did mention it at one point. Obviously, they liked him when he was in TNG and decided to bring him back. But of course, he has a link to... I don't know whether you know this. Do you know that he has a link to Jerry Taylor, that he's Jerry Taylor's son, the actor?
I probably knew that at one point, and I am embarrassed that I don't know that in the moment right now. But no, I didn't actually recall that factoid.
Yeah, so apparently there was a whole thing when he got the job in TNG, I think, about her not even mentioning that he was her son because she didn't want it to, like, make them give him the job. But he got it anyway.
Yeah, that sounds familiar now. Yeah. Now that's ringing a bell. He's also the actor that played the newsboy in Time Zero in The Next Generation, if memory serves.
He is, yes. And it was only when I had a quick look on Memory Alpha before recording this that I found out that he also played a Malon at one point. So I'm going to have to go back and try and find
really?
Him. Really? Yeah.
I didn't know. I didn't do my homework, clearly.
You didn't do your homework, Zach.
I don't actually research these
C-minus.
Podcasts. C-minus. We have time for that.
Yeah.
I shoot from the hip way too much, you know. Okay, so which do you like better? Do you like Vorik's personality or Torek's personality? Are you Team Vorik or Team Torek?
The thing is, right, I'm not sure whether they're that different. And
oh, I think they're really different, really.
Well, no, right, okay. So what I'm thinking at this point is, if they are brothers, for example, and I think it has been kind of semi-established that they're twin brothers, and I think this was actually taken into one of the games. It's not Star Trek Online, but I think it was actually one of the other games that it was kind of retroactively backwards engineered as
canon.
It's
just much more, it's much more fun to think of them as being brothers. Who cares
yeah.
if they're not, right? It's, we can think of them that way.
Yeah.
It's more fun.
Or maybe it's the same character, and when he was in TNG, they got his name wrong, but he's a Vulcan and he's too polite to say.
Can you picture... Yeah, Vorik's walking around on the Enterprise D, and he's like, God, I wish they would just get my name right, but
yeah.
I'm going to be a nice, polite Vulcan. I'm not going to lose my cool.
Exactly.
As Vorik would say, we have to keep our cool.
Yes, we do have to keep our cool.
He did say that, didn't he?
I think so at some point. Yeah, that sounds like something he would say anyway.
I think he got the phrase from Tom Paris.
That's it, yes.
And B'Elanna says in reply, there's hope for you yet, Vorik.
Yes, yeah, I do remember that. But what I was thinking was, if we're saying they are brothers.
Yeah,
when,
let's do it.
When Torek appears in TNG, obviously they're somewhat younger. I know it's towards the end of TNG, but Vorik doesn't really feature in Voyager until season 3, I think he first shows up, even though obviously he's there from the beginning, like everybody else on the ship. So they're a little bit younger, and obviously, like, I get the impression with Torek, and it's interesting because I think we don't see a lot of young Vulcan characters. So I think we get Savick in the movies, is supposed to be a bit younger and stuff, but
just angry teenage angsty Tuvok.
Yeah, yeah. And he's just kind of, I just get the feeling like he just doesn't really know how to human yet. He doesn't know how to deal with humans yet. He's like, I don't really know how to deal with you people. And he tries to deal with Geordi like he's a Vulcan. And obviously he isn't. And he's surprised when he doesn't get the reaction.
But he comes back with some really clever quips in response to, you know, shenanigans that go on in that episode.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think...
it's got a sharp tongue.
That is actually an attempt, I think, by the writers to make this kind of young Vulcan... feel like, to make him feel different from Vulcans that we've seen before, and I do quite like it. But I think Vorik is probably less starchy, stiff and starchy, I think, than Torek. Certainly,
I think Vorik is kind of a loose cannon. Actually, I think Torek was actually kind of, he was a little more refined. You know, he had not a silver tongue, but he definitely could, you know, find just the right phrase in response to what was going on around him. He didn't quite know how to human. I think you're right.
Yeah.
But he was observing, and he had a quick tongue in response to whatever happened. I think Vorik was way more of a loose cannon than Torek was.
Yes. Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
His marriage proposal to B'Elanna is case in point.
But. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Where did that come from? But we'll get into that in detail.
We'll get there.
Yeah, we will. But, yeah, I don't know. There's something really, without getting into the depths of kind of the stuff that goes on with Vorik later on. There's something really nice about him as a character. There's something very pleasing about him, because I think until we see maybe T'Pol in Enterprise, I think he looks very different to any other Vulcans that we've seen. And it's in a way where he's still very recognizably a Vulcan.
I think what's interesting about him is that we're used to seeing Vulcans as being like the overachievers. They're the doctors, or they're the first officers, or they're the ambassadors, right? And you just get to see random low-level, you know, engineering crew Vulcan. And I think that's fascinating.
Grunt Vulcan.
Yes, it's a Vulcan grunt. And what Vulcan would be okay with that? Don't Vulcans view themselves as being kind of overachievers and that part of their cultural identity? What goes on in a Vulcan's mind that makes him okay with being a low-ranking engineering officer with no real ambition from what we can tell?
Well, I don't know. I don't know whether we get enough into his character to kind of see that, because if he is that young, obviously he hasn't actually got to the point where he's able to really progress yet. And there are other people before him. And obviously Vulcans are very much about respecting the chain of command and respecting the structure and the hierarchy and everything. So I'm not sure, like, ruthless ambition is something we'd see them display particularly. I mean, with Torik, we see him. He's got ideas and he wants to put them forward.
Well, see, this is an interesting question. It's a bit of a tangent because we're talking about Vulcan psychology in general now compared to Vorik in particular. But to what extent are Vulcans ambitious? And to what extent are they, what's the relationship between their stoicism, being content where they're at in the moment, no matter what they're doing, what their station is, what their rank is, their overachieving nature? Vulcans tend to be good students and overachieve. To overgeneralize, Vulcans tend to be very studious and they're going to do what they need to do. They're going to follow the rules. They're going to try to move ahead. And ambition, like, what? Why do some Vulcans move up the ranks? Is it really just this latent emotion and this sort of human-like psychology that's below the surface driving it? Do they really have ambition? Do they really view themselves as prideful and being an overachiever? Are they genuinely stoic and just some of them just naturally, temperamentally, are fine with their station in life? Do we get that variation, or is there something else going on?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I kind of feel like Vorik is going to get there. I don't feel like that's where he's staying. I think Voyager is a weird special case, of, as we've talked about previously.
He's gonna have to punch Joe Carey in the nose for it, though.
Yeah, I don't think that's gonna happen.
That's the only way he's getting promoted.
Yeah, that is true. But yeah, I mean, Voyager aside, would we have expected to see Vorik have moved up the ranks after 7 years? Yes, I think I would have done.
Well, like any officer, right? That doesn't tell you anything. Like, how high up the ranks would he go? Is he a potential captain someday, or is he a potential, you know,
senior lieutenant? At this point,
lieutenant?
I'm like, read the goddamn books, Zachary, because I don't want to spoil them for you, but, you know.
Oh, man, you're throwing the books back in my face?
I am throwing the books back in your face again. Sorry. Read the books.
I need a starting point.
Do you want me to tell you where he ends up in the books? Because I don't think it's that much of a spoiler.
Well, I'm not going to get that far.
He does end up being a chief engineer.
Okay, well, that's helpful. Okay, so we get chief engineer Vorik in the books, at least. And on which ship? What is it? On Voyager?
Yes, on Voyager.
Where's B'Elanna?
Oh, read the books, Zach. Seriously, this is like a million spoilers.
I just want you to give me the Cliff Notes version, the K Notes.
B'Elanna is elsewhere.
Okay. Nice and precise.
Possibly on another ship. Possibly in a similar region of space. Or possibly not. There you go. That was very unspoilery, wasn't it?
So it turns out that Vorik is not as much of a loose cannon as we thought, and he does become chief engineer on Voyager, no less, someday.
Yeah.
So we had potential, clearly.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. And I think it's just the situation, Delta Quadrant. Everybody's pretty much stuck where they are after the initial, well, we've got to promote some people because some people died.
I do think of Vorik, he tries to make the most of it.
Yeah.
Like all the Voyager crew do.
To circle back round to your original question, which was about, oh, well, are Vulcans ambitious or is it, you know, something else? I don't know whether it's ambition in the same way as you'd recognize it in a human, because I think ambition, there's emotion attached to it. I don't think ambition in and of itself is an emotion, but it definitely has an emotional component to it. So I think it's probably different. I think it's just a case of they end up being the best at whatever they decide to do because they're so disciplined. I think whatever they decide, that's the thing I'm going to do. They just end up rising to the top of it because they're just so fixated on what they're doing, and they're so mentally disciplined that they just end up being the best at it because they're not distracted and they're not kind of led off by doing other things. They just do it.
They focus and they put in the work.
Yeah,
that's what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah, they're just dedicated, and that's just a part of who they are. So I think it's just natural that they end up being the best at whatever it is they decide to do. And I think we just see that everywhere. I mean, I don't think we ever see any particularly underachieving Vulcans.
Well, I was kind of trying to steer Vork in that direction. Is he one of these like just sliding by? He's good at his job, but he's not ambitious. It doesn't sound like that's how you view Vork. I view Vork as just kind of happy where he's at. And I don't see much in Voyager, in the show itself, that leads me to think otherwise. But
well, I mean, I think that's probably because at that point he realizes that there's not any chance of progression for him in the current environment, and because he doesn't have kind of emotions of frustration or anything like that of that situation, I think he just makes of the situation what it is, same as Tuvok does.
The only hope he's got for a happy life is finding some half Klingon, half human woman to marry.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, he even says at one point, he says, I wouldn't have chosen to explore the Delta Quadrant, but actually, you know, now,
but while we're here,
now that I'm
exploring
here, it's pretty intriguing. So,
okay, now it sounds like all of us, we could learn a lot from Vorik, right? Well, you know, I didn't mean to go this direction in life, but while we're here, might as well make the most of it. I mean, that's a good lesson to learn.
Yeah, I think that is absolutely a brilliant lesson. And I think a lot of people could stand to learn some of that. I think there's a lot about, I don't know whether it's specific to Vorik or whether it's Vulcans in general.
I think it's Vulcans in general. I think Vulcans are very much like the ancient Stoics of our old Earth, you know, Greek and Roman Stoics, just kind of being content where you're at rather than striving for things that will never come to be.
Yeah.
I think that's very much a part of the Vulcan worldview.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, Vorik really does kind of, he certainly epitomizes it in that situation. I think there's something more about him, though, I think, than about other Vulcans that we see. I think there's just something more. I don't know whether it's like the youth and whether that's how that he's developed the character and how they've tried to put that across, that he's not, obviously Tuvok is a lot older and we see a lot more kind of steadiness from him, and he's very level, and there's not this kind of, like you were saying before, you know, that he's a bit of a loose cannon in places.
Well, insofar as Vulcans are generally stoic, I think that's true. I think they err on the side of being depressive stoics. They're not particularly fun to be around. Whereas I think Vorik does have this youthful enthusiasm. He's like, well, I'm stuck on Voyager. I can't do anything about it. So we might as well go exploring, and in parentheses, and I might even have a little fun doing it.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, that's there, isn't it, in air quotes at the end, like unspoken.
Yeah, he wouldn't say that, but I think there is some youthful enthusiasm bleeding through. So I don't think, and I think here on Earth, here in the real world, Stoics are accused of being no fun. Like, you're stoic, you're stern, you're not particularly emotive. But Stoics were actually fairly cheerful in accepting their circumstances, the Stoics of old Earth.
Yeah.
I think of Vorik as like that. They're Stoic and they're kind of cheerful about their circumstances.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. Definitely.
And he's savvy enough to know that we shouldn't lose our cool.
Yeah.
As Tom would say.
Picking up on what you're driving at there, I think the word cheerful, I think, is kind of an interesting word. I think I might attach that slightly more to Vorik than I would to other Vulcans. I think there is a sort of, it's not emotional, but there's just more of a,
he's amicable in a way that, yeah, maybe not cheerful, but he's amicable.
Yeah. It's like, if he said fascinating, I would believe it more than if Spock says it. Like, Spock says it and it's so deadpan, it's like fascinating. And it's like, really? Is that really what you're thinking?
Okay, Leonard Nimoy had the straight man routine down. Yeah. Right? He could emote with his eyebrows and whatnot, but generally he played a stiff Vulcan guy. And Tim Russ does the same thing in his portrayal of Tuvok. Generally, it's stiff upper lip, rigid back, and he'll emote with his facial expressions and he'll be more subtle than that. But the posture is very rigid. But that's not how Alexander Enberg plays Vorik, right? He plays him a bit more casually, you know, in the body language, in the posture, in this slightly amicable responses to the queries that he's given. You know, he's more of a casual Vulcan.
Yeah, he's definitely looser. I agree. Like, he does kind of, He doesn't look like he's got a sort of rod up his back in quite the same way.
Oh, you can say it, Kay. Come on.
Rod up his backside. There you go. I'm going against my own thing now of where I rant about people having rants about Vulcans being too boring. But anyway.
Well, Vulcans, they're way more interesting than they're perceived because they do all of this subtle emotion and the subtext that goes on. And it's way more complicated than the surface reading of anything you get with Vulcans. But I do think Vorik is, you know, I don't think he's the deepest character. I don't think he's as thoughtful necessarily as Spock or Tuvok. He doesn't have the experience. No. He's not as older and wiser. He is youthful. But I think he's just generally, you know, he's Vulcan, so he's not going to, you know, bust out in a big grin or anything. But he's just more amicable and likable and casual. And he doesn't seem to feel the weight of portraying himself as a Vulcan in a certain way. I think Tuvok feels like he's got to portray himself as a Vulcan. And Spock does the same thing, as distinct from all the people around him. I think Vorik is much more willing to blur the lines between his self-identity as a Vulcan, his identity as part of the Voyager crew.
Yeah, I do agree with that. Again, I wonder, I think I've always thought of that as being part of, like, him being younger, and the fact that where Spock and Tuvok are is, like, somewhere you get through years of practice. It's like his Vulcanness isn't that refined yet.
So are you saying that if he were back in the Alpha Quadrant, not stuck in the Delta Quadrant, if he were exposed to a bit more Vulcan culture, a bit more Vulcan peer pressure, he would become more Tuvok-like or more Spock-like? He would stiffen up.
Yeah. I definitely think so, yeah. The thing I do find really interesting, actually, is that I know we don't see much of this or enough of this to kind of get a proper impression, but the impression I've always got of him and Tuvok is, like, I don't know, I always kind of thought that Tuvok would be like more of a mentor to him, but he's not really. He's almost kind of like, oh, it's nothing to do with me. It's like he does his own thing. Do you know what I mean? And I'm like, that's not how I always saw Vulcans. I always saw that more as kind of like I always figured they'd get together in like meditation club or something.
Well, they do band together. Like they have their own nightclubs in San Francisco. Right? Or yeah. Sausalito, maybe. Was it Sausalito or San Francisco? I can't remember.
I can't remember. Yeah.
So, okay, that's a great question. Why aren't they best buds? I mean, there's an age difference. Like, there's a generational difference between, maybe a couple of generations difference between Tuvok and Vorik. But why doesn't Tuvok take it upon himself to mentor Vorik? And what does that say about Tuvok? What does that say about Vorik? What does it say about Vulcans in general? Is this a vast overgeneralization to think that Vulcans would band together just because they're all part of the same species? They all have pointed ears, that they're all going to like hanging out together?
I don't think that's how I mean it exactly. I think it's more a case of Vulcans are working their way towards this kind of
Kolinar.
Well, yeah, exactly. They're working themselves towards this kind of perfection, almost, to coin a Borg phrase, but they're working towards this kind of ultimate level of emotional control where they're absolutely 100% control of themselves all of the time. And obviously, you know, if we're using the youth metaphor, Vorik's not there yet. So I find it interesting that there's not more of a kind of Tuvok supporting him in that growth, because obviously that's something they learn from other Vulcans, and he hasn't got any other Vulcans there to learn that from, like he would his parents or some other mentor or whatever if he was back home on Vulcan. So it seems strange to me, especially given the fact that Vorik might be similar age to Tuvok's own children, that's not a natural thing that happens. Not that they would automatically do it because they have pointy ears.
So now I'm kind of envisioning a situation where Tuvok files the paperwork to legally adopt Vorik.
I think he's old enough to not be adopted.
That was part of the information they sent back to the Alpha Quadrant. The adoption paperwork got sent back.
Although I don't know, maybe he isn't. Like, I mean, how long are Vulcan's children for? Is it much longer because of their longer lifespan? Maybe he's only like 7 in Vulcan years.
I don't really
years.
Know. It is kind of weird though, because Tuvok spends a lot of time mentoring Kes.
Yeah, exactly.
So why doesn't he spend at least that much time mentoring a fellow Vulcan who really has the same worldview and needs the guidance?
Hmm. Well, yeah. And I mean, especially given the fact that Vorik kind of comes on the scene and we start seeing the show around the sort of time that Kes starts to leave it, that would almost feel like a natural change of for Tuvok to kind of latch onto him somewhat.
It can't be as simple as they just don't like each other, right? That could be that simple. Vulcans don't like each other sometimes, right? Do Vulcans infight amongst one another? I presume they do, like any sentient species would.
Well, I mean, I don't know whether they can not like each other because they don't have enough emotion to care, do they? They just don't care. I don't know. I really honestly
can you picture like Tuvok and Vork on opposite sides of engineering, and Tuvok's like jerk and Vork's like, you know, targ.
I think a Saylat would probably work better. Since
jerk,
it's Vulcans.
Saylat.
There you go.
Tuvok's a jerk, man.
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't ever see them getting that animated.
Tuvok's a jerk. I learned that phrase from Tom.
Yes. Well, that is where he would have learned that from. I can just imagine that in engineering, and B'Elanna's there and she sees it, and she, I don't know why Tom would be in engineering, but he has to for this scene to work in my head. He's just kind of leaning against the console.
He's inviting B'Elanna to a picnic.
Yeah, and B'Elanna just kind of scowls at him when Forek says that. I learned that from Tom, and B'Elanna just scowls at Tom. She's like, oh, what are you doing to my staff?
Watch what you say around the Vulcan kids. Yeah.
Look at what he's picking up off you now. He'll be swearing in a minute.
He's like, Vork's like a sponge.
He is like a sponge. He is. Well, he must be a kid because, you know, we all know before Blood Fever, he hasn't gone through puberty yet, so.
That's a frightening thought.
It kind of is true, though, isn't it? Like, I mean, that's his first Ponfar, so.
There's like a difference in scale there, like human puberty versus Vulcan first Ponfar. Are those on par? Pardon the pun. Are they on par with each other?
Well, they kind of must be. Because, you know, presumably before their first Ponfar, they've not done anything or kind of been there.
Like, what is second base for a Vulcan? Now, we know that some Vulcans play baseball, so they understand the metaphor. What is the Vulcan second base?
Sharing a prayer mat. It probably is, actually. That would work. But yeah, I'm not, I mean, seriously, like, that's how I equate it in my head. That's like, oh, Vorik's a man now.
Like, hey, Vork, you're gonna have to start wearing deodorant, dude.
Yeah. And shaving.
I love this, like, alternate reality scenario we're describing where older Tuvok mentors younger Vork. Like, he's got to do all this, like, he's got to give him the talk, and he's got to teach him how to shave, right? Well, can't you picture, like, Tuvok and Vork in front of their mirrors inside Tuvok's quarters, and they're like, okay, up and down, not sideways, Vork.
But yeah, I mean, obviously that's not what happens, because it really amuses me, actually, in Blood Fever, and we're slightly jumping ahead, because we haven't talked about, like, how it all sort of progresses through the episode, but there's the bit where Varric's just like, this is really private and I don't want to talk about it and I'm just going to go in my quarters and deal with it on my own and meditate. And the doctor's like, not really happy about it. He wants to be like treating him and all this kind of thing. And then the doctor goes to Tuvok and he's like, so what's with this Ponfar thing? Blah, blah, blah. What's going on with Varric? And Tuvok's like, he doesn't say it in these words, but he basically says, I don't know why you're coming to me about this. I'm not going to talk to you about it. It's nothing to do with me. It's all to do with him. Blah, 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 blah. The end. Goodbye. So he's not going to teach me how to shave, obviously.
What happens in the shaving talk stays in the shaving talk.
If indeed there is one. Apparently, Vulcans just have to figure it all out on their own. Self-sufficiency is very important for a Vulcan.
It's like humans and cleanliness is next to godliness.
Yeah, something like that.
I can picture this Vulcan phrase, self-sufficiency is next to colinar. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I like
Thanks
that.
For the advice, Tuvok. Still need to learn to shave, jerk.
Yeah. I still have no idea what I'm doing with this thing. I've cut myself 5 times already. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, we've been in before into this whole weird thing that Vulcans have with the privacy around Ponfar and all the rest of it. And how it doesn't really make logical sense. But I don't know. I kind of felt like I got a bit more of a sense of what that was all about when I watched Blood Fever this time.
Well, I think what's fun is seeing a youthful person go through Ponfar, right? Spock was not it wasn't his first Ponfar, even when we see Spock going through Ponfar, right?
Yeah.
The first time in the original series, right?
Yeah.
That was not his first Ponfar.
No.
Right. So, and then we see older Vulcans, of course, going through Ponfar, but we never really saw like a youthful, fresh out of the academy Vulcan going through Ponfar, and how massively irrational he could be. And and I think this is important. Like, I mean, you mean attraction is like this in general. I think this is a metaphor for us, and maybe it's a metaphor for Gene Roddenberry's psychology too. But I think, you know, being attracted to someone is inherently an irrational thing. Like the fire in your Vulcan loins is, you know, on fire. So, and that's an irrational kind of thing. Whenever you're attracted to anyone, I just think it's a great metaphor for attraction in general and how anti-rational that can be. It's a metaphor for us.
Yeah. I think when we look at all of the other races in Star Trek presented as aspects of humanity, which is what I know that the writers were trying to do a lot of the time, I think that is a great thing to point out, that, you know, you totally lose it. It's irrational, and there's nothing that you can't be logical about it, you can't be methodical about it, you can't apply any kind of your normal way of thinking to it. It just is.
Yeah, like Vorik trying to explain to B'Elanna why she would be a perfect wife for him is the most ridiculous scene I have ever seen.
It's pretty funny.
It's ridiculous because it's not rational, and turns out he's just a horny Vulcan. And he's trying to rationalize it. And, you know, humans can be like that too. We try to rationalize the heck out of things.
Yeah, so. Yeah, definitely. I just feel like Pomfar doesn't make sense, but it does make perfect sense at the same time. It makes no sense that they're so kind of private about it, but then equally speaking, they prize control so much and it's a complete loss of control. So I can't understand it from that. I don't think it's a prudishness about sex. I think that's the bit that people get wrong.
No. I think it's an out of control thing. They're ashamed of their behavior, I think.
Yeah. I don't think it's the we're talking about sex and we're uncomfortable part bit.
No.
That's
the
problem.
And
I think that's where it's sometimes, because obviously, you know, that's what the doctor says to him, you know, why are you so incapable of talking about sex? It's just a biological function and you know, it's just a logical thing. And it's not that, it's the loss of control that they're ashamed of, essentially. And I think also as well, because when they're going through Pomfar, because all of their emotions are suddenly so close to the surface, any sense of like shame or embarrassment or anything like that is going to be amplified, just like all of the other emotions that they're going through.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, can't they just say, look, I was on Pomfar, cut me some slack.
See, I get that, but equally speaking, I don't think Pomfar should be a free pass for them to get away with absolutely anything.
It kind of is, though, right? They're always like, he's on Pomfar, and, you know, the next day he's back to normal and everything's fine, right?
Yeah.
He gets a total free pass.
Well, yeah, I know, but they can't get away with anything at all. They shouldn't be allowed to get away with anything at all.
They get a lot of leeway.
They get a lot of slack, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the way that he behaves towards B'Elanna is kind of... he gets a bit creepy there.
Well, he gets punched too, just like Joe Carey, so...
he does. B'Elanna makes a habit of punching her staff.
It's team building. It's like trust falls.
It is team building. Maybe it's like some kind of exciting club.
Yeah, I've been punched by B'Elanna Club.
I've been punched by B'Elanna, and I'm obviously now in the inner circle for engineering.
It sounds like some weird messed up version of the Mile High Club or something.
It's pretty it's pretty ritualistic, yeah. Well, I mean, punching is pretty ritualistic for Klingons, so. Just like most forms of violence. But yeah, I mean, they're so funny, aren't they, with the whole Pomfar thing? They really are.
Well, it's interesting because sometimes there's some inconsistency inside Star Trek about how Pomfar is treated. Like for Spock, it's like something hush hush, no humans know about. It's very like it's a total secretive thing. And then other times it's like everyone knows about it, but we're all ashamed about it. And other times it's like, oh, we just can't talk about sex. Like, you know, it sometimes goes that direction too.
Yeah.
So like, is it a different time period thing? Like, you know, back in the original series days, they genuinely didn't know about Pomfar, and now we do, and now Vulcans are, like, massively ashamed, their secret's out.
Yeah, I think so. I think because obviously, like, Spock is the first Vulcan serving in Starfleet, isn't he? So once they've got a multitude of Vulcans serving in Starfleet, I think it just has to inevitably become a thing that people know about.
Kirk takes great pains to try to keep it off the record, right? Yeah. He assures Spock he's not going to talk about it. He's got to kind of gently bring Dr. McCoy into his confidence. It's not part of the official record.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think it's as a result of what happens with Spock is the reason why it then becomes generally known about. I think that's as later on we get more Vulcans and Starfleet, and obviously Starfleet doctors have to be aware of it and so on.
Well, they start putting two and two together. It's like, wait a minute, every 7 years, what is going on here?
Either that or, you know, Vulcans are only assigned to missions that are 6 years, 11 months, 3 weeks, 6 days, and 23 and a half hours maximum.
No 7 year missions for Vulcans.
No.
It's part of Starfleet regulations.
Yeah. Exactly. And then they just like, right, 3 weeks of leave for you now. Off you go. I wonder how like precisely they can time it.
Is it like down to the day?
Yeah.
It's a good question, right? Because why is it 7 years exactly, right? Those are human Earth years, right? Why? What is the Vulcan equivalent? Every Vulcan what? Ponfar happens.
Yeah, it's probably seven years is probably the closest to something human.
Do you think it's like one giant metaphor for the human 7 year itch?
Maybe. Probably. Makes sense.
I mean, I'm serious. Like, okay, Ponfar, it happens every 7 years. It's like, when did the phrase 7 year itch come into common parlance?
Probably before that. Because do they actually mention the 7 year thing in the original series?
I'm almost certain they do, but I wouldn't stake my life on it.
I wasn't 100% sure about whether that was that or whether that had been caught in later, whether they decided conveniently later that that was, you know, oh, look, Star Trek shows are 7 seasons long.
No, I think that's the thing. It's like, why does it happen so all of a sudden and so irrationally? It's because every so often this is a biological thing that just happens. And that's the only way to explain why it happens so suddenly with such an onset.
Yeah, and it's a roundabout so long. Well, I mean, I understand it with Vorik because obviously, like, the first one is less predictable when it's going to be because you don't have a frame of reference and it's probably going to be different for everyone like it is with humans.
That's a very interesting question. Like, is there like a common start date for Ponfar or is there some
it's
variation?
Between the ages of this and this.
Maybe Vorik is a late bloomer.
There are outliers, obviously. If that's his first Ponfar, he must be pretty young.
Well, he went through the academy, so he's at least got a, you know, he's at least what, between 18 and 21 or 22 or something?
Well, I don't know. Maybe not.
Maybe
that's
not.
Just like how it works for humans, isn't it?
I don't really know how it works for a
Vulcan,
admittedly.
I assume ages of when you can go to Starfleet Academy is just whenever they think you're ready to pass the entrance exam, not what age you are.
Yeah, we do see some instances of like older teenagers that aren't quite technically, like Wesley Crusher, he's going to the Academy, he's not an adult yet, right?
Well, yeah, and then some races, like, I know we don't ever see Ocampa in Starfleet Academy, but if they were to go to Starfleet Academy, obviously they wouldn't have to wait till they're 21 because they'd have been dead for 3 times the length of their life by then.
So your question is are Vulcans in general, and Vorik in particular, are they more like humans or are they more like Ocampans in their lifespan and the
Well, their lifespan is generally a lot longer than humans, isn't it?
But how long are they children? How long are they teenagers?
Well, that's the bit
I'm
not quite sure about. Because we don't actually ever find out how old he is. I mean, maybe he's like 30 or 40, but actually in Vulcan years, that's still pretty young.
That's a long time to wait for your first Ponfar.
Well, yeah, but not necessarily for Vulcans. Not when their lifespan is so much longer.
I think I had some friends who had to wait that long for their first Ponfar.
Yeah, Camper are probably thinking, wow, 13, 14, that's pretty long to wait for puberty.
It's a long time to go without.
Yeah, exactly. So it's all relative, isn't it?
We don't really know the answers to these questions, of course. We're in pure speculation land here. I do think it's interesting to think of Ponfar as a metaphor for humans, though, because I think, you know, we humans are not as rational as we'd like to think we are in our progressive, modernist, you know, post-Enlightenment society. We still have this biological undercurrent, and the Vulcans symbolize that to a great degree in Star Trek, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. Vorik gets pretty crazy there, doesn't he?
So what do you think about his proposal to B'Elanna? I thought it was romantic in a way. He's like, I think we'd be a good match, and blah, blah, blah. And then he gets, like, a little crazy, a little too quickly there. She has to punch him, but...
Yeah, I mean, in a really weird Vulcan way, it was kind of adorable.
Well, she says she's flattered, and she's like, but my answer is still no.
Yeah. And then he starts getting really mad, but...
Well, I love that he has to kind of rationalize it, because humans do this, right? It's like, oh, I think we'd be a good match, because blah, 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 blah. And we rationalize this massively irrational attraction. Yeah. We do that all the time.
I love it when he says... Well, I can't remember exactly what it is that he says to her, like, to begin with. But then when she's like, what is it that you're saying? He just responds with this amazing sentence. In human terms, I am proposing marriage. Do you accept?
I like the part when he basically says, you're kind of a loose cannon, B'Elanna. You're half Klingon with your temper. I could help. tone that down.
Yeah, and then there's the whole thing about, well, you are restricted to 73 male individuals or whatever it is on board, and probably most of them would break if you tried to do anything with them.
And he says, and their numbers are dwindling. They're pairing off. You better hook up with me quick.
Yeah, and I'm totally robust enough to stand your Klingon. How's your father?
Well, he does have superior strength, you know, so...
Yeah, and then it all gets a bit wrong after that.
It does.
I'm not keen on that bit, actually. I find that. I mean, I get it, and I don't have a problem with it in that way, but it's a bit uncomfortable to watch.
He oversteps his bounds in a number of ways.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. No consequences, right? He's acted very badly, but no consequences. Because he's got the Ponfar excuse card to play.
Well, I mean, in a way, I kind of wonder whether or not it wouldn't be more, like, up to B'Elanna. Because B'Elanna, if B'Elanna says, oh, well, he was on Ponfar, it's fine. But if she was like, no, I'm not cool with this, you need to do something with this guy for what he's done, then I think they would probably do something about it, yeah.
I guess that's overall my point, though. People are generally pretty tolerant because they understand where Vulcans are coming from on this.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it surprises me that they wouldn't have come up with, like, some other way of dealing with it.
Like, I don't think there is what is a good way to deal with it? Like, you could put him in the brig, like, until it's over. Like, what else can you do?
Well, I mean, it's the 24th century at this point, and there have been some fairly epic advances in medicine to where we are now. And
give him a hypospray?
Yeah, well, yeah. And I mean, Tuvok says over and over again, oh, it's a chemical imbalance. Like, well, rebalance his chemicals with a hypospray. I mean, like, I don't quite get why they can't just do that.
But it's a natural thing, Kay.
Yeah, and that's fine if they're in a situation where they can just go and deal with it in the normal way. But when they're in a situation where they can't...
I said that totally ironically, because just because something's natural doesn't mean it's, like, the morally right thing to do.
Got
like,
you.
Ponfar might be a natural occurrence for Vulcans, but it still makes them act like jerks.
Well, exactly. And I mean, if it's putting the people that they work with or that they're around at risk from them, like, violence, then, yeah, you need to do something about it.
So is there a Ponfar treatment pill in the 24th century? Or we never really learned this.
Well,
the
there isn't. Hyperspray? There obviously isn't. And I'm fine with the fact that there isn't, but I want to know why there isn't. I want the explanation of why we can't have that and we don't get it. So that kind of annoys me.
So do you think there's like two? There's like the Ponfar suppressant and there's like the Vulcan version of Viagra, like the Ponfar enhancement. The blue pill or the red pill?
The blue pill or the red pill, wow. I don't even know where to go with that, Zach. No, they've just got to wait.
Yeah. Star Trek explores every aspect of the human condition.
It does. We love it for that. Do you know, it's quite interesting, actually. This is just something that's in my head at the moment quite a bit, actually, because of the new series coming out. Because obviously, you know, people could be listening to this at any point in the future. But as we're recording now, we're about 10 days away from the new...
Not even 10 days.
Well...
9 days, according to my
10 family. Days for me, thank you.
Oh, that's right.
away from the new Star Trek show Discovery coming out. And I'm just thinking about it because there's been a lot of things about people saying about, you know, the certificate and the fact that it's been rated slightly higher than previous Star Trek series and how people are worried about what the content's going to be and all the rest of it. But actually, sometimes I watch Star Trek and I just think, it's already been there. Definitely already been there.
In terms of television, I don't really care for gratuitous sex and violence for its own sake. But if it has something to say about the human condition, and I think if anything is a part of the human condition, our biology is a part of our human condition, right? So I don't mind, you know, delving into those topics as long as they say something about us as a people.
Yeah. I think Star Trek is more out there on a lot of topics than sometimes people remember it being. I think people romanticize it a lot more.
Yes. Look at the original series. It's a sexy little show. Yeah. You know? Look at those sexy androids they have walking around.
Yeah. And I mean, like, once you get to season 3, Kirk's just got a new girl every week, pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, people can romanticize the history of Star Trek. And, you know, you got to go back and watch it with fresh eyes.
Oh, there's no sex in Star Trek except that episode I'm thinking of now where Kirk...
Except most of the original series and a good portion of The Next Generation. Oh, and some Voyager while we're
I'm just thinking about that bit where that episode where they cut back to Kirk putting his boots on. And it's like, yeah.
Subtle.
It may be slightly subtle, but it's not really very subtle, is it?
Right, it's not. So No, but that's what I like about the Vulcans. The Vulcans, you know, they draw attention to this inner conflict that humans have about these aspects, right? Kirk, you kind of go, you know, he's a caricature of himself in a way. Like, he's the ladies' man. He becomes a caricature. With Vulcans, you see the inner struggle that we humans go through any number of different ways in the course of our own being.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I get what you're saying about the whole, oh, well, you fall for someone and you just, everything goes out of the window. But equally speaking, I think we've got to be careful not to just assume that that means a total loss of control, because it doesn't.
Oh, well, not for humans, but for Vulcans, yeah. It seems to. Well, Vulcans, it's an exaggeration.
It's an exaggeration,
I think,
yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think the Vulcans are a caricature in the sense of portraying an aspect of human nature, human being, but amplified, exaggerated, turned into a cartoon, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, well, I mean, we see that throughout Star Trek with the Klingons and the Ferengi and everything else,
right,
that we
see.
They're
all caricatures, really, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So, Kay, I'm trying to think of other instances where we see something of substance from Vork, because he's there a bit, but he's often plays this background role, like he's fixing something, engineering, doesn't have a lot to do. I remember, though, that he is part of the crew that designed and built the Delta Flyer.
Yeah, I mean, he is, yeah, but I don't know whether we get an awful lot from him at that point.
Well, I don't think we get a lot from him, but I was kind of wondering what his take on it would be. Like, Tom wants to turn it into a hot rod, like, you know, put the cool old-fashioned controls and the joysticks, and, the, you know, he's going to soup it up a little bit. What do you think Vorik's take on the souped-up hot rod Delta Flyer was, even hypothetically?
I think that, after the discussion that we've had now, I think that Vorik would pretend that he's really interested from an engineering point of view in the Delta Flyer, and it's all an interesting intellectual challenge. But in reality, he loves the Delta Flyer because it's like a really hot car that you can go fly around. And secretly, he looks up to Tom and he's got a bit of a man crush on him.
I can picture it now. Vork's like, Commander, can I have permission to take the Delta Flyer out of the shuttle bay for some diagnostics? He's like, really? I just want to hot rod it.
Yeah. And he's
punch it.
And he's sitting in the pilot's chair pretending to be Tom, because Tom is secretly his role model.
Do you think he makes, you know, little vroom vroom noises, like vroom vroom, vroom?
Probably.
While he's driving. When no one's watching, yeah. Of course. Secretively.
Yeah.
To himself.
How would we know, because we never got to see it? I think that's headcanon now.
Right.
I mean, he just wants to be Tom, doesn't he? He just wants to be Tom Paris. He wants B'Elanna. He
wants B'Elanna.
He's picking up Tom's phrases. He's helping him build the Delta Flyer.
He doesn't just want to ride shotgun. He wants to drive.
We've identified the secret truth about Vorik during this episode. He just wants to be Tom. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because he does kind of look up to Tom. Like, I learned that phrase, we shouldn't lose our cool, from Tom. Yep. He's not getting stuff from Tuvok. He's learning stuff from Tom.
Yep. Wow. A young teenage boy with Tom Paris as his role model.
As his role model? That's a frightening thought.
It is quite a scary thought.
Tom Paris is the young Vulcan's role model.
Early Tom Paris. Later Tom Paris is fine.
It would have been fun, given that, if they had drawn that out a little bit. Like, it would be fun to see Vorik hanging out in the Captain Proton program with Tom and Harry.
Oh, yeah.
Tom, Harry, and Vorik.
Who would he have played, though?
He would be Buster Kincaid's sidekick.
Oh, the sidekick's sidekick.
Sidekick of the sidekick.
Yeah, I never knew this was where we were going with that. I didn't know that Vorik was going to turn out to have a man crush on Tom, but apparently he does.
Apparently he does.
Apparently.
So that's the thing about thinking about Vorik. He doesn't actually appear all that much. And when he does, he gets blood fever, and that's a great Vorik episode. We get a couple of little scenes, and then we have a lot of Vorik in the background fixing stuff. Mm. But we don't get that much of Vorik. It's really the blood fever show.
Yeah, I mean, that is his main thing, where he appears, and that's where we get.
There's that instance in the episode Alter Ego when he reserves a table for B'Elanna in Neelix's resort
program. Yeah,
well,
that's before blood fever.
Yeah, but it shows that he's got a crush on her big time, right? He's reserved a table for her.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what they were doing there. I think that was setting up for the later episode. That they were sort of casting that little seed there. And it's nice that they did that, because it's only a few episodes beforehand. It's one or two episodes beforehand, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But that is quite nice. And I mean, we do get a few other little references, you know. I mean, like in Counterpoint, obviously we have the whole thing with the telepaths hiding in the transporter beam, and obviously Vorik's involved in that.
But we don't get much that's unique to Vorik in that, though, right? It's just he's
no,
one of
not
many
really.
Telepaths,
but I mean,
right?
It's nice that when they do that, obviously he comes up again and. We get the little reference and stuff.
I actually think it's cute that Vorik reserved the table for B'Elanna, because either he's sucking up to his boss, or he's just trying to be nice, or he's got a crush on her, probably all three.
By the sea, with a sea view. Very nice.
Yes.
Very nice. I like what he did.
He remembered that she said at some point in the past that she liked the view.
He's definitely crushing
her. He remembered. He's very thoughtful. He remembers all the details.
Yeah, I think he's been crushing on her for a while. I don't know when that started, but...
You don't think of Vulcans as being romantics, but, you know, Vorik is pushing the limit here on Vulcan romanticism.
Well, I mean, we said, you know, he hasn't figured out how to human yet, but I think that was more towards Torik than Vorik, but... Because Vorik's clearly figured out how to human.
We don't really see Vulcans being romantic, either with each other or during Ponfar, right? They go from totally cold to, you know... All the thrusters are burning and not a lot of in between.
I don't know. That whole finger thing's quite romantic. You know, when they get the two fingers and they...
Oh, yeah, that's true. Okay. But that's not like romance, like wining and dining romance. That's more like, you know, seductive romance. Yeah. I don't know. What is that? It's not wining
and
dining.
It's like a Bond thing, isn't it?
The ritual of wining and dining and reserving tables and ordering the wine. And, you know, that's... Vorik is going the wining and dining
direction.
I mean,
they make for life. You can't get much more romantic than that.
Well, that's true, but it's logical.
What would a Vulcan date look like?
That is a great question.
That is a question I feel we need to answer.
I do feel like even on Voyager, it would be let's go to the holodeck, because what else is there to do on Voyager?
Well, yeah, but what would they do on the holodeck?
No. Let's assume we're not stuck on Voyager. Okay. Like, okay, we're on a starbase, or we're on Earth, or on Vulcan. Let's say we're on Vulcan. What would Vulcans do on a date on Vulcan, no holodeck?
There's a very obvious answer that I don't want to give. Meditate.
Let's go meditate together.
That's
Ooh,
romantic.
Baby.
There's candles. There's a whole ton of candles.
That's true. They got the candle thing going. Do you think they would go to the science museum, the science institute?
Yeah.
Sorry, the Vulcan Science
They
Academy.
Have all of those, I'm sure. Museums, institutes, and academies are all things that...
Yeah, you just kind of think Vulcans are just walking around doing their science stuff, but really they're all on dates with each other. Who'd have thought?
Yeah. Maybe Vulcans are just on dates all of the time.
Wow. You'd never know it, but maybe it's true.
We are making some stuff up tonight. I don't know where this is coming from.
It's been a long week. I think we're all
It has been a long week. Yeah.
No, it has. I think it's, you know, this is my chance to blow off some steam in true Vulcan fashion. So, hey, verbal ponfar, is that what you're telling
verbal
me?
Verbal ponfar. What does that even mean?
I don't know. Just blowing off some steam.
Well, as always, it's been an awful lot of fun talking apparently some complete nonsense about Vorik tonight.
Apparently.
Yeah. But that is not the only thing that we've been talking about here on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
I think there's a better chance of what happens in the comics reflecting... the television show, as opposed to like the first TNG comic that had like the two bickering husband and wives that worked on the bridge, the Bickleys or whatever, and they ran around in capes for some reason, and it's just like they had these
that's
really
canon
like,
in my head. Yeah, that's canon.
You're right.
To the journey.
And so I could see the Hirogen viewing themselves as very noble, very civilized. They don't let their prey suffer, but really they're doing these horrific things, just like we do here in the real world when we have to go fight wars.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they go home and they write an epic poem about it, and that makes it okay.
the Hirogen equivalent of Beowulf.
Warp 5.
Gary Graham came over and said a couple of nice things, but the funny thing was he said... I've been on this show for 4 years. This is my first day on the bridge. You're over there firing the phasers? What is going on?
Standard orbit.
I was really hoping that Quinto would have a tie-in to, you know, when the Hobbit trilogy came out, you know, a few years ago. I was like, oh, they might tie into that, and Quinto can have a remix of the Ballad of Bilbo Baggins. They didn't quite go there, did they? So.
No, they did not. They did not. But, you know, there are certain things that you can, I guess... mirror or remake, that is not something that should ever be remade.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You will find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPod, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and a review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can also stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link.
Well, we would love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways that you can share your thoughts with us. The best place to join in the larger conversation with us is in the Babel Conference, Trek FM's listeners-only discussion group. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose Message to a Trek FM Show and select To the Journey. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at Trek FM and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. Well, Kay, when you're not down in sick bay getting your Ponfar hypo spray, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network these days?
Well, you can always find me in the Babel Conference. And if you want to look me up on Twitter, my handle is ChocoWeeble. And Zach, when you're not looking up to the wrong role model, where can our listeners find you?
That's the best kind of role model. You have more fun with Tom than with Tuvok.
Absolutely. Who doesn't have more fun with Tom than Tuvok?
Totally. Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of MetaTrek's Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy. Especially if you want to hear me talk more about Vulcan Stoicism over there on MetaTrek's, you can find me over there, along with my co-host, Mike Morrison. You can also find me in the Babel Conference if you'd like to talk about Voyager with me over there, and you can find me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Fruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G. And Kay, while we're at it, do you want to let our listeners know where they can find Suzanne, our Missing in Action co-host, who will be returning to The Journey next week, as we understand it?
Well, you can find her on Twitter, and her handle there is KJaneway8. If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, The Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month, and we really, really appreciate any support you can give us, so we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
Well, there are some people we'd like to thank before we call it an episode. We'd like to thank C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek.fm, and the role model for all of us, Vulcan or otherwise. Our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp, Aaron Harvey, our art director, Richard Marquez, our production manager, and Brandon Shea Mutala, our Patreon manager. And we'd like to give a special thank you and a shout out to our 5 associate producers here on To the Journey. We'd like to thank Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, Richard Marquez, Patrick Carlin, and Norman Lau. Thank you for your support of Trek.fm and To the Journey.
So, join us next week when, in human terms, we'll be proposing marriage. Do let us know if you accept. But until then, this has been To the Journey.